The College Game Day podcast is presented by Old Dominion Freight Line, helping the world keep promises.
We got a real simple plan. One man, one mission.
Georgia has won the national championship. Touchdown!
If you're a fan, you might think this is sports heaven. This might be college football heaven.
This is ESPN's College Game Day podcast. Now alongside Pete Thamel is Reese Davis.
Where the shakeups will come in this week in November, a couple of rivalry games and perhaps a proving ground or two. This is the College Game Day podcast for Friday, November 11th. Reese Davis, Pete Thamel, and Bill Connolly here once again to make only wrong predictions. All of us are well under 500 for the season, all embarrassed by our overanalyzation of making picks against the spread.
Balls.
Yeah. Pete, the one thing I did notice, though, is that you and I spent a lot of time on Wednesday talking about the playoff rankings and potential implications. Our good friend Bill Connolly, who I love his work, and I always read his pieces on ESPN.com with great interest. I started, in the spirit of conspiracy theories, I started thinking, wait a minute. Bill Connolly, initials BC, his formula, BCS Bill wants to go away from the selection committee and human judgment and put our future back in the hands of computers. So Bill Connolly, it's my duty to put you on the spot here. Were you a big proponent of the BCS when the BCS was here and we actually did this and used a formula to pick who competed for champions?
Yeah, I mean, I always said the BCS's biggest problem was it could only fit two teams on the field. Everybody hated it because there were more than two deserving teams half the time and they only picked two of them. And the formula, it always drove me crazy because every time the formula kind of disagreed with conventional wisdom, they changed the formula. Which is a problem, and we tried to make the formula more like humans, basically, and that's never the way to go about it. But I did find it kind of, I was mad. I put out a piece on Tuesday morning, basically I was jokingly calling it the formula with kind of using SP Plus and resume ratings and all this other stuff, poll averages, to kind of come up with a new BCS formula. And I called it the formula. And it actually agreed like the top nine with the CFP rankings that night, but it was right there. BCS was right there. Bill Connolly's system was right there to be used for this formula.
That's disappointing.
I whiffed. Like three different people on Twitter were like, hey, you should have called it this. Like, I know. Where were you yesterday?
That's a great idea. And I don't want to go down the BCS rabbit hole, but I read that you wrote that in the column, and it's something that I've felt and said for years. The BCS wasn't nearly as bad as everyone thought, but it undermined its own credibility over the years by doing exactly what you said, because that was a tacit admission that, well, this formula is not good enough. And really what they should have done is said, this is the best formula we can possibly do. And that's what it said. And, but anyway.
So. Remember the Harris poll?
I do remember the Harris poll.
Harris poll is a little dicey. So I look forward to the sequel of Life to the BCS, or Resurrection of the BCS.
That's right.
The Bill Connolly system story playing off the famous Death of the BCS from probably 15 years ago. So
yeah,
that would be a bestseller amongst the Connolly family.
No, it was interesting to see. Like the top nine, they got it right. I thought maybe they'd still have Tennessee over TCU. I thought they'd have LSU a little higher than I felt they should have been, since LSU still has two losses. But the top nine matched up with the formula. Really, the only teams they disagreed on, they still like Clemson way more than like math or my eyeballs do, in putting them 10th there. And then they therefore also like Notre Dame more now. But it was pretty, this was a good performance, I thought, by the committee. And I can kind of back that up with math.
Yeah. Do you think that once we expand the playoff to 12 teams, that these formulas, I mean, by definition, half the field's going to be set by just winning conference championships.
Yep.
Will the formulas become more or less important in terms of factors on which they will rely to rank them once they get into that system?
Yeah, it'll be really interesting because, I mean, you can say that the stakes are lower now when you're picking 12 teams as opposed to four, but picking four has been pretty easy so far. I mean, obviously, there have been some disagreements. There were disagreements in 14. I threw a fit about Cincinnati not getting taken more seriously in 2020 because we had just seen what Notre Dame could do against other playoff teams with their healthy quarterbacks. But, you know, generally speaking, I didn't really disagree with any of the 32 teams they've picked so far. You go down to 12, though, and you're determining some kind of blurry resumes. You're determining who gets buys. You're determining who gets home field. You're determining a lot more things than just here are the four teams. And that does offer the possibility for more disagreement or more weird picks or whatever. And I'm curious how that plays out.
I don't think, and this is just my sense of it, and a lot of this will be determined by what the appetite is among the leadership structure in college football for the continuation of bowl games and where they want those to rank, meaning the broader picture of bowl games. But I think one of the things that's going to happen is that the four teams at the top will be very happy to get a bye and very unhappy that they don't have a home game on campus. And because of that, I don't know that it will be that long before it goes to 16 to make sure that the teams at the top all at least get one of those home playoff games. I know the calendar's a challenge and all of that kind of thing, but that's going to be a little irritating, I think, for some of the programs that you win your conference, you get a bye. Yeah. That's great. We love that. And then we have to go and travel to three straight neutral sites while, you know, somebody got a home game. So, and all of the energy that will go along with something like that.
Yeah. I'm not going to complain if we go to 16, just because it doesn't change the number of rounds or anything like that. And, you know, those home atmospheres are the most fun part to me. Like looking at possibilities, if we had a 12 teamer this year, things like Ole Miss playing at Michigan is on the table. That would just be neat. Things to just haven't happened in college football before. But, you know, TCU playing Oregon on a neutral site or something has happened plenty of times. So that is just from a novelty standpoint, the home game is definitely the most interesting part here.
Go ahead. It's like $1 billion entertainment business, right? And I don't think people are sick of the playoff or people who stop watching playoff or anything like that. And I do think we've shaken out of the predictability doldrums a little bit this year, especially with Alabama and Clemson on the outside looking in, which is just generally good for like a healthy, vibrant coast to coast sport. But like, I think that the thing I'm most excited about when we go to 12, and I hope the Rose Bowl doesn't get in the way and we actually go in 2024 instead of 2026, but there's still some golf left to play here the next few weeks between the mighty commissioners to get that home and not three putt, which it's a group that's three putted a lot. Is all the new and the different and the things to be excited about, like Ole Miss going to Michigan is a wonderful example of that. But I just think every year there'll just be this completely dynamic, unexpected, cool, like Camp Randall hosting a December playoff game amid, you know, crazed snow like that. You know, if Wisconsin is sort of, and they've kind of been when you project it back, a pretty sneaky, consistent top 12-ish team. Every year, there's just going to be some sort of new. And look, we're not going to have UMBC and Florida Gulf Coast, like those types of outliers come in. But what we are going to have, which I think is going to make this playoff great, is just places that aren't conventional powers getting their moments, like Wake Forest, maybe, you know, last year, for example. I don't have the numbers in front of me, but like that type of a place hosting a playoff game, that would be pretty neat. Say NC State grinds its way up and they've done a really nice job bouncing back this year and they're in the playoff. What a moment that would be for that campus. So we're, you know, the sort of best part of the high end of the sport, you just don't get some .com bowl game and like a cool pullover in a video game system, right? You give the campus a moment, you give your students a moment to share. Like I think that's a pretty neat part of this.
And in a real role reversal here, while Pete espouses all of the wonderful things that's going to happen, I'll point out that, oh yeah, because staying at four, we would never get anything new in the playoff just by the normal cyclical nature of the sport. I mean, there's no way that, I don't know, TCU and Tennessee could be in the playoff this year under a 14 format. We have to expand to make sure, that an Oregon team that lost by 46 points, that they couldn't be in a 14 playoff, that, well, we're going to have to expand, you know? So I'm just saying,
I already said I hated Christmas the last episode. I mean, what do you want?
I'm for it. I'm for the expansion. But I just want to be on record as saying it comes with a cost. And this notion that people got all crazed about, that as long as it was four teams, it would forever be Alabama and Clemson, was ridiculous. It just happened to coincide with the greatest dynasty in the history of the sport, and one that, you know, is pretty good, and at least challenged that dynasty and kept it from being even greater than it already was, really, with the two championships that Clemson was able to win. But
yeah, anyway. I feel like we've maybe overstated a little bit. Like one of the talking points, especially for expanding to 12, was just that, you know, once those first rounds, including Ohio State and Clemson and Alabama and whatnot, it really suddenly it changed recruiting, and the players were only wanting to go to those schools, and it hurt recruiting. And there's some, you know, like the West Coast, certainly a lot more players started drifting east around that time. So there's probably some value in that. But at the same time, like Georgia had only made one playoff I don't even think they had made that playoff yet when they started completely dominating in recruiting. I think we maybe have overstated a little bit of that. And a lot of this is just the cycles of, we always have dominant programs that, mm-hmm. you know, Alabama's consistent dominance means the names haven't changed quite as much as we're used to, but we've always had dominant programs and we still will. But I don't see this hurting recruiting by any means.
The recruiting thing, I mean, who's really beating Ohio State?
Right.
And, you know, in Alabama and Georgia, even under any system, and the West Coast chapter of it. And after this, I'll get us to the picks. The West Coast chapter is more about interest in atmosphere in the stadiums as much as anything.
And hires. And hires, you know, just some uninspiring hires out West, too, I think.
Maybe so. But I mean, who, you know, CJ, I keep going back to the CJ Stroud quote. Why would I want to go play in half-empty stadiums when I'm playing in front of 100,000 every week? And people really, really care in Columbus, Ohio, in a way that there are very few outposts in the West where their level of caring even approximates touching the hem of the garment of the way they care in Columbus, Ohio. You know?
Well, Bryce Young, Jaden Daniels, man, is a great example, right? Saturday night, you know?
Yeah.
Game of the year, top five, finish of the year, top five. And they're showing like Little League highlights of those two dueling against each other in Southern California, at least, you know, talking about, you know, when they did that. And Bryce Young obviously was committed to Clay Helton. And quite frankly, he and his family made a great decision to not subject themselves to the inevitable decline there and mm-hmm. go play for the Bama machine. And Jaden Daniels was a really highly regarded recruit. And chose Arizona State, and made a great decision for his career to scoot out of there and, you know, mm-hmm. get off that sinking ship to go to LSU. And he's clearly, you know, developed a lot more in his year there than he did his first 3 years, quite frankly, in Tempe. But it's what's the signal if you're the best freshman in high school right now at Bosco or at Mater Dei or at Rancho Singa Margarita or one of these powerhouses that, you know, produce quarterbacks at a high clip. Well, boy, that looked pretty fun in Tiger Stadium the other night. Bryce, you know, like it's just, mm-hmm. it becomes a little bit of a self-fulfilling prophecy from a recruiting standpoint out West.
Yeah. But you know, the good news is that there is a bit of a resurgence. Mm-hmm. Oregon certainly is always a fun place to play. If Washington can keep it going, that historically has been a raucous atmosphere. And, you know, we know how things are in LA. You know, if SC wins, it's going to be really, really attractive to play there. So these things too can be cyclical, but I do think it's a hurdle to overcome, even for good programs, because the level of intensity in the SEC, at Ohio State, even at Clemson, is a little bit different than perhaps what you see other places. Many, many, many days to delve into that during the off season.
Get a bird's eye view of it, Reese, next week, perhaps, if the schedule falls right.
Yeah, maybe so. Maybe so. See UCLA
in the 213.
See how it goes. Taylor, let's make some picks and let's see if we can do it right this time.
Fellas.
That moo sounds like it's really struggling, by the way, Taylor. I could probably get some of Teddy's toys that do a better moo. It really sounds like a wounded duck.
I know I can never hear it. It always sounds like nothing happened, you know? I mean,
I don't want to ruin, you know, there's technical issues involved with the Zoom call. There's a button I could push that could make it sound better. Maybe we can try and tweak that for next week. Or Pete, if you want to take your phone and record a little moo sound from one of Teddy's toys, we could throw that in there as well. That'd be very
easy. We have a lot of things that moo around the Thamel household right now.
So love that.
Including me to make him laugh. But we're not going
to
do that.
Ooh. How about I sing happy birthday to you next week and you moo on the podcast?
That would be a birthday gift for all of us, Pete, if you would moo on the
podcast. I do a mean moo. If I'm going to moo, I'm going to have Teddy on my lap and he's going to smile at my moo, because I'm only mooing for baby smiles, man. I ain't doing it for you chuckleheads.
Fair enough. Well, again, dear listener, this is the race for the ribeye. The stakes are the stakes. And last week, everyone went 3-4. But everyone nailed their locks, which was a first for the season. So reasons to celebrate there. And we won't divulge the overall records because those aren't really important. But Bill, we'll call him points here. Bill's got 41 points, Reese 39, Pete 38. So, you know, a lot to play for here in the coming weeks. We'll get to the first game here. The East Carolina Purple Pirates heading to Cincinnati. Cincinnati, a 5-point favorite. Cincinnati, and maybe to a certain extent, East Carolina trying to stick around at the top of the conference. And, you know, if Tulane were to slip up. So let's go Reese, Pete, Bill on this one.
You know, East Carolina is a tough team to figure sometimes, but they're probably playing their best ball of the season. I think they've won their last three. They're trying to go for four straight. But, you know, really they haven't. They pushed Cincinnati in Greenville last year, but they haven't had much success against the Bearcats. I think they've lost 10 of 11. Cincinnati's won like, I think, 31 in a row at home, something like that. So that's a 5-point spread for the Bearcats. It's a Friday night game. I'm going to say this has really been a season dominated by home teams. So I'm going to say Friday night, Nippert, 5 points. I'll take the Bearcats and lay the 5.
I've been impressed with East Carolina this year in a lot of different ways. They had that NC State game to open the season, right? They lost a heartbreaker to Navy in double overtime or early in the year. They've, you know, when they've needed to be authoritative, they've been authoritative with the, you know, with the stinker at Tulane in New Orleans, the only exception. The one thing about Cincinnati this year is that they have lived on the edge. They won at Tulsa by 10. They only beat South Florida by 4. They beat SMU by 2. Cincinnati can win this game, but having conviction that they're going to win it by more than 5 is difficult. So I'm going to take the Pirates and the points, and hope we get a little AAC classic at the Nip.
So the big number I look at in a given week, my SP Plus ratings scream Cincinnati in this game, Cincinnati by 11. So I'm going to pick them just out of faith there, because SP Plus has done a better job of picking games than I have this year. But it is noteworthy that basically every trend points to East Carolina right now. Cincinnati has covered like 1/6 of the time this year. They are underachieving. They're underachieving SP Plus projections for that matter. And meanwhile, like you said, you know, 2 weeks ago or 2 games ago, I guess, ECU destroying UCF. That was a, you know, they produce those results sometimes, but that was their best result in a while. Beating BYU, you know, we're following that up by going out west and beating BYU was impressive. They're a good team. I'm picking Cincinnati, so I don't have to think very hard. But trends point to East Carolina in this game. It's just, you know, 5 points might not be enough still.
Should we throw the idea by the listeners that next season when we do this, and I hope we do this again next season because it's fun, we have SP Plus as its own. We just make a name for him, like Sammy Bag of Donuts, and we put him on the scorecard. At least I wouldn't have to buy him a steak because it's a fake person.
That's true.
I think we should do that because it would only just remind Bill that he's created this formula that's brought him fame and wealth, and he's still like too smart to use it all the time.
Yeah, I'd love to know how every time I say, well, I'm going against my numbers on this one, I just assume that those picks are like hitting at 10% or so. It's not, I can't imagine it's great.
The 2024 NFL Draft heads to Detroit, and it's time to see who gets the job.
Caleb is a unique and special talent throwing the football.
And what sets them apart?
The Heisman Trophy winner is Jaden Daniels.
All of the greats were hired here.
What a throw by Mahomes!
See who gets the job.
Are you ready?
The 2024 NFL Draft begins Thursday, April 25th on ESPN, ABC, and NFL Network.
This might be my favorite game of the week here because the Big Ten West is in complete chaos. Purdue is heading to Illinois. Illinois is 6.5-point favorite. Illinois' Big Ten West lead is down to 1 point. A whole bunch of 3-3 teams, including Purdue. Let's go Pete, Bill, Reese on this one.
So I just think Purdue's falling apart. Yeah. Like there's just no other way to say it. Like to have faith and conviction in Purdue with the way they've played recently, just it makes me a little bit I don't think Illinois is some you know rollicking juggernaut right now, but to me my faith in Purdue has been shaken. So I'm gonna take Burt in just the fact that the way they play and who they are, you know, creates some steadiness and some consistency. And Michigan State was a bad matchup for them. I don't see Purdue that in that same way. I think they can set the tone and bring the arm bar. So I'm taking the line.
Yeah, I mean, Illinois, last week's game reminded us that when you're all on one side of the ball, when you're dominated by one thing or the other, you know, a weak unit can still backfire on you randomly. And the offense not being able to, they moved the ball reasonably well, but, you know, they failed in the red zone constantly. They still rank 87th in points allowed per drive, as opposed to 87th in points per drive, first in points allowed per drive. They're still extremely one-dimensional. But yeah, I mean, I think at this point, Purdue's been like they underachieved against Nebraska, then they underachieved by more against Wisconsin, then they fell apart against Iowa. It's really hard to have any faith in that regard. This is a huge game because, you know, Illinois still holds a bunch of important tiebreakers, and they can probably afford to lose to Michigan. They can't afford to lose to Purdue or Northwestern, though. They gotta see this one through if they want to actually win the Big Ten West, like it's looked like they will for a while. So they have a little more to play for here, and they've just not been falling apart the way Purdue has. So I'm going Illinois.
I agree with both of you. I'm going with Illinois too. That was not a good performance by them, but the last time we saw Purdue. Weren't they getting run all over by Iowa? Iowa, who has run over no one all year. Now you bring in the nation's leading rusher again. I think Chase Brown has moved back to the top of the. No, I take it back. Still Dwayne McBride, leader among Power Five rushers, almost 150 yards a game. Probably a little frustrated by what happened last week. Bill, you mentioned the tiebreakers. They haven't lost a game against a division opponent yet. Still have a big game with Michigan coming next week. I'm gonna go with Illinois also, and I will take them to cover the spread against a Purdue team that is fading quickly.
It is good.
The Tide headed to Oxford as a 12-point favorite. Let's go, Bill, Reese, Pete.
It's been funny this week on Twitter. It's the same thing that happened in 2019. And, you know, a lot of people are kind of grumbling, like interacting with me. Like my little formula still had Alabama in the top 10. Or SP Plus and FPI still have Alabama in the top 4, I believe. Like, come on, that's just, they're clearly not that good this year. Like, yeah, they're still really good. They still, for all the offensive glitches, you know, they still scored 49 against Tennessee. They still scored 31 with overtime help, obviously, last week. Their upside is still ridiculous. And so, yeah, quick reminder, they're still quite good. But in this case, it's kind of Ole Miss is good, too. You could say they've been kind of trending in the wrong direction a little bit here, especially – well, I was going to say, especially on offense, but really on both sides of the ball, they've shown a lot more glitches. But coming off a bye week, it just kind of feels like 12 points is a lot to to, you know, take away from Alabama here. I think, you know, SP Plus says something more like Bama by 7 or 8, I believe. Obviously, we know what an angry Alabama team can do, but they are glitchy, and Ole Miss is still really, really, really solid. So I'm going to foolishly, it feels, but I do feel like that line's too high. I'm going Ole Miss.
It's not foolish at all, because I haven't seen any indication whatsoever that this Alabama team is angry. They haven't, they didn't respond the way one would have anticipated after escaping against Texas. They didn't respond the way you would have expected after the loss to Tennessee. I've said on the Monday podcast that Georgia did what Alabama used to do. When someone showed up to challenge them, they hit them in the face with a shovel. Well, Alabama's lost its shovel. They've lost their edge. They're a good team. You're right, man. And Bryce Young is brilliant. Yeah. I mean, he's phenomenal, but their offensive line gets a bunch of penalties. They, you know, it might have been your numbers, Bill. I don't remember where I saw these. They're like among the bottom 6 or 7 in the country in blown block rates in the running game. They blow blocks, period. Bryce keeps them from having given up a boatload of sacks. They don't catch the ball. The receiver or the defense doesn't stop in big plays. Why in the world, with the way they've played on the road against a good team, which Ole Miss is, why would you lay 2 touchdowns with them? No way. I'll take Ole Miss. And, you know, I almost expect Ole Miss to win the game, because when you have, when you've played for the stakes that Alabama has forever and that's gone, man, sometimes it is really hard to keep it together. And while Saban hasn't had a lot of opportunities to do that at Alabama, you know, they did famously respond after that 2010 season and put together a great performance in a bowl game against a pretty good Michigan State team and took them apart. But there were a couple instances early in his career that when all was lost, that they, you know, the wagons didn't exactly get circled.
Utah,
that was early in the tenure. I was talking more about LSU. Utah, Oklahoma are two glaring examples of that. Happened a couple of times when he was the head coach at LSU. It's human nature. And, you know, I don't see it. I think if Alabama were going to respond, it already would have. I think this is who they are. They're a talented team. They're capable of beating anybody, but they also have some significant flaws, and they don't play with this. I'm not saying they don't play hard. This is different. They don't play with that same edge that they've always played with, particularly in big road games. I'll take Ole Miss.
Well, I need to come back. And I've been skeptical of Alabama on the road all year. Anyone who's listened to our picks would know that. The reason why I think Alabama has a chance to lay the, what is it, the hobnob boot that you've been talking about, Reese, because we're in Georgia? Well,
that's only a Georgia Larry Munson thing.
I know. I just think, yeah. I think Alabama can win this game authoritatively because Ole Miss is a one-trick pony and Saban can stop your trick, right? Ole Miss has the nation's third best rushing offense, and their passing offense is pretty pedestrian. They're a little bit limited, and I feel like the teams that have threatened Alabama have been able to press them. We obviously stood there and watched it in Knoxville for 4 hours that day. So I do think, like, human nature comes into play here, and I think Alabama responds. I think they're more talented than they played this year, quite frankly, and I think they're right now at a crossroads, and I have a hard time seeing that program turtle. So I think they bow up on defense, they stop the run, they handle the environment at the Grove, and they win authoritatively. So I'm going to say Roll Tide Roll with Bryce Young, you know, throwing for 4 bills. Just, I don't know to who.
Some more action atop the American. UCF headed to undefeated Tulane. Tulane, a 2-point favorite. Let's go Reese, Pete, Bill.
Yeah, undefeated Tulane in conference play. You know, they do have the one non-conference loss. And Willie Fritz is one of the biggest turnarounds of the season. It was certainly on the list for College Game Day to visit. They've employed a lot of diverse offensive weapons that will be hard for UCF to handle. Bill mentioned the East Carolina UCF game a pick or two back, which scares me on this. But man, oh man, first, John Ross Plumlee is having a great year since Mikey Keene has been playing. I mean, they've really moved the ball again, had a big win over Cincinnati. You know, I've gotten in trouble waiting on this Willie Fritz Tulane ride with Michael Pratt and Spears and all of those offensive guys to come to an end. I've gotten in trouble doing that a couple of times, but I'm going to take UCF on the road. I think the Knights will go in and get the victory.
Well, I think Tulane DC Chris Hampton should be in the Broyles, one of the Broyles finalists. Tulane's defense was just atrocious last year. It was 102nd in the country in total defense. They gave up 429 yards a game. This year, I believe they are 16th in the country in total defense, 307 yards a game. That is a 100-yard clip less. It has been one of the most distinct unit turnarounds that we've seen in the sport this year. And I really feel like with where UCF's offense is right now, Tulane can come in what I hope is a rabid environment at Yulman Stadium. Like this is arguably the biggest home game Tulane has played since they've left the Superdome. And quite frankly, they didn't play a lot of big home games in the Superdome. So I feel like, you know, New Orleans is a pro town, but it shows up for a party, and I feel like it could be a good party. So I'm going to pick the green wave to keep rolling.
Yeah, this is a tough one just because both teams are among the best overachievers this season, both in terms of, you know, covering the spread and also, you know, in terms of SP Plus projections, everything else. They both overachieve just about every single week. So I can't really – I always search for trends in that regard. There's no trend here. So I guess I'm just going to go with the fact that I do think UCF's still a hair better, just a little more reliable on offense. The defense really has the Tulane defense. I love that Fritz, you know, Hampton, he was the DC last year and they were dreadful in every possible way. They fell apart defensively. Fritz didn't fire him. Fritz didn't panic. He just, you know, they went about their business a second year and everything's come together nicely. Almost nobody gives up fewer big plays. They just do a nice job of containing everything. And that's obviously going to be important against UCF and the number of different big play weapons they have. But I guess, yeah, like for a game this tight, if you're picking, I still just think UCF's a little bit better. And obviously, you know, you pick them plus two, you're also probably picking them on the money line in that kind of situation too. So I guess I'm going UCF. Go wave. I love that story, but I guess UCF's better.
It is good!
More 3-3 in conference play teams. Wisconsin, a 1.5-point favorite heading to Iowa. Both teams acquitted themselves decently last week, so should be interesting. Let's go Pete, Bill, Reese.
Do you have the over-under handy, Tanner? Because I would think it starts with a 3.
Yeah, it was 36 as of Monday.
36. Oh, never change Big Ten West. Actually change. I don't have a ton of conviction other than that this game is going to be some version of a mud fight between sumo wrestlers. And when mud fighting between sumo wrestlers go with the hot team, which is Iowa, I mean, look, they're now the 129th offense in the country, up from 131st ever since Pat McAfee called for Kirk Ferentz, fire Brian Ferentz. The Hawkeyes have caught fire. I say that in jest, but give them credit, right? I mean, everybody bagged on Iowa for about a month, and here they are, just being Iowa again with a path to finish strong and maybe end up in that Big Ten title game again. It's not a sure thing, but they are certainly in the thicket of it. They close Wisconsin at Minnesota, who they've had a lot of success against, and then they have obviously Nebraska at home. So, I am not going to go away from the hot hand, and they look like they found some identity in the run game. It's obviously going to be a lot harder to do against Wisconsin than Purdue. So enjoy your field goals and your punts and take your Hawkeyes.
Yeah, before the Northwestern game 2 weeks ago, Iowa had averaged over 6 yards per play once in 22 games. 6 yards, I mean, that's pretty good, but it's certainly, you know, it's above average, basically, in college football, maybe slightly more than that. But they never showed any promise whatsoever. They've done it two straight weeks now, 6.1 against Northwestern, 6.5 against Purdue. And Purdue's defense had actually, well, earlier in the year at least, had been pretty solid. So it does feel like they're trending in the right direction. It feels like Wisconsin's trending in the right direction, both with what they did against Purdue, scoring 35 points, and then, you know, holding Maryland to only 10. Both of those are pretty solid accomplishments. So it does, the early season still gave Illinois the overall edge in the division, but you do figure if Illinois slips up here, either against Purdue or Northwestern, this game means a whole heck of a lot. So, I'm looking forward to this a lot more than I was a month ago. It's still going to be a rock fight, but it might be a little more high quality rock fight. I guess in the end, it's kind of the same deal. When the line's that close to even, go with the team you think's better. And I think that's Iowa right now, because their defense has been a little better than Wisconsin's this year. It is definitely, it's going to be a lot harder. It's going to be hard for either one of these teams to run, but I guess Iowa's better because their defense has still been overall quite lovely this season.
What are good rocks for a rock fight, Bill? Is there like a granite or a slate, or do you have
that's got some point, a little pointed, you know, that causes a little bit extra damage. You know, you don't want it too smooth.
There will be nothing smooth about this game offensively, but there will be two really good defenses out there. I've had a lot of fun at Iowa's expense, and I want to, you know, that was a really strong performance against Purdue. Caleb Johnson, the freshman, going for 200 yards. I hate to default to this, but I have our ace researcher, Marissa Dowling, looking at quality road wins across the board and for elite teams. And these two teams aren't elite teams. But it seems to me that the great football philosopher David Pollack has been on to something this year, that the hardest thing to do is win on the road. And I ordinarily would probably go with Wisconsin because they probably have a little bit better quarterback play, even though, you know, I know Mertz has been erratic. But I'm going to go with Iowa. I think they've found a little rhythm. I think they'll be able to run it enough. They'll probably kick one more field goal. I'm expecting an odd score. It'll be something like, 19, you know, 15 or 15-11 or, you know, something like that. There might be an 11 involved in the score, but I'm gonna go with the Hawkeyes. Hawkeyes getting a point at home. Might as well take any little point you can get a game that is likely to be very low scoring.
When Wisconsin wins 31-0, I look forward to the group text on Saturday. Yeah,
exactly. How we should have known. There's Jim Leonard. Hire that man.
Oh, yeah, that would absolutely get him hired for sure. No, this feels like an 11-er game if ever one existed.
It is good!
Rivalry game. Kalen DeBoer's Washington Huskies headed to Eugene to face the Oregon Ducks. Oregon, a 13.5-point favorite. Let's go Bill Reese-Pete.
I really hope this game's awesome. Awesome Washington Oregon games are really, really high up there. And it's in, obviously in Eugene, there's going to be a good atmosphere. It's a huge game for Oregon for many different reasons. And, you know, transfer quarterbacks galore here. Two quarterbacks who really, really weren't all that great the last time we saw them going out west and putting up huge numbers. So I have high hopes for this game. I also have high hopes that it's going to be closer than 13.5. I mean, Oregon's clearly the better team here. Their defense, well, I can't really say too many good things about either one of their defenses, but Oregon's averages have at least been brought down a little bit by Georgia. So I think, you know, maybe there's an advantage there. And what we saw last week with Washington, the weather wasn't quite as bad as we heard it might be for Washington, Oregon State on Friday night, and Washington still kind of struggled here and there to move the ball. I guess I trust Oregon to win, but I'm just going to go on the faith that 13.5 points is too many. So give me a really, really fun mid-afternoon game at Autzen there. Hopefully Oregon will win, but hopefully it's by like 8 to 10 instead.
I'm really tempted to do the same, Bill, because I'm hopeful as well. This history, the history of this rivalry is much richer than maybe people who aren't in the Pacific Northwest realize. dating back. Bill loves it. I mean, Pete loves it when I go down memory lane or drop historical things. You know, Nike co-founder Bill Bowerman once returned a punt 87 yards for a touchdown. And legend has it that the track coach, Bill Hayward, at the time, who I believe the track stadium, track field, still named after him there, was running alongside of him, reminding him to keep his knees high in that game in the 30s when the Ducks won it. I referenced on Wednesday the Rose Bowl controversy from the 40s, and then the Kenny Wheaton, the pick. And there's a lot of disdain and outright contempt historically between these two programs. And Washington comes in with the nation's leading passer and Michael Penix. But that atmosphere and the way Bo Nix is playing, and I think there's probably a little more oomph on the Oregon defense to allow them to be able to get out to a lead. I'm scared to death of the back door on this one, with Oregon being up 17 late, game well in hand, and Penix throwing a touchdown pass to make the final score, 42-31 instead or something like that. But I think Oregon's the better team and probably by a pretty significant margin. So I'm going to go with the Ducks to cover, but I have a lot of trepidation about that being closer than the 13.5.
Reese went back so far, I thought he was going to start talking about the Oregon Trail when, people would go to the game, but they'd get cholera or dysentery or typhoid, and
What is it that they say? There's something, I learned a new phrase when we were up there earlier this season. I need someone to remind me of it. It's something about, the really tough people or something, the adventurers or the ones who stayed, when they went on the Oregon Trail. Some stopped at certain places, but it's only the real adventuresome spirits who kept on going and wound up in Oregon. I've got to get that phrase from my good friend.
Well, the Oregon pass defense has shown signs of typhoid at times this year too. So I'm gonna go bad, simple, non-analytical math on you and say that the Washington pass offense, which is number one in the country, and I don't know what metric you want to use about Oregon's defense and secondary. And I know they have Christian Gonzalez, who I like a lot, but there's just a lot of numbers that defense has given up. So I think it's a bit of a shootout here. And I think Washington hangs around and I think they cover easily. And it wouldn't surprise me if there were some folks in Phil Knight's suite feeling a little uptight in the fourth quarter in this one.
It is good.
Next up, Kansas State at Baylor. Baylor, a 2.5-point favorite. Let's go Reese, Pete, Bill.
Hey, Baylor's hitting its stride right now. I think Baylor has designs on earning its way back into the Big 12 title game. That was a really good win for Texas at Kansas State on Saturday night. The one thing that I was very sorry to see about that was the way it ended with an Adrian Martinez fumble, because he had avoided those types of things for the vast majority of the year. So, I was sorry to see that. I've been really high on Kansas State all season, even into the preseason. But, I think Baylor is starting to sense the potential to get back to the Big 12 championship game and maybe even win the thing. They've got TCU coming up after this as a big two-game homestand here for the Bears coming down the stretch. So it's only a 2.5-point spread. And while certainly, Baylor has been vulnerable at times, there have been times they've given up boatloads of yards and points. And Kansas State is capable of doing that to you, whether, no matter which quarterback is running the show. But I'm going to go with the Bears and say that they win that and set up another showdown in the Big 12 with TCU next week.
So it's interesting, some of the stuff I read out of Manhattan this week, that Will Howard, the intention all season was to redshirt Will Howard. He never took any mop-up duty early in the year, so they're trying to keep him below the four-game threshold in order to do that. Will Howard has played in both the Oklahoma State game and the TCU game, and so I think that Adrian Martinez is going to start for Kansas State, and it appears, if you kind of read between the lines of Chris Kleiman's comments this week, that they're going to keep Will Howard on ice unless it's very necessary in order to preserve that red shirt. He's obviously listed as a junior, but would have the COVID year, I believe. So he's got some time, and quite frankly, he's put on performances that make you a believer that he could be a steady signal caller of the future for Kansas State. So that said, it's going to be Adrian Martinez's show in Waco on Saturday night. Which is interesting. These are sort of two similar like DNA teams to me. There's just an undercurrent of great coaching, really good toughness that goes along with them. And I just think that Baylor, and give Dave Aranda a lot of credit, right? They lose back-to-back games to Oklahoma State. They lose at West Virginia, and they've just kind of started pounding the rock back and figuring out a way to go back. They win two road games. So I feel like they carry that momentum going. They've got an identity going, and they can figure out a way to wriggle out another win here.
Yeah, at this point, I can't really figure out Kansas State. They've maybe defensively, especially, they've started to underachieve a little bit. But in the middle of this little string of underachievement, they beat Oklahoma State 48-0, which completely blows out any sort of trends that you can possibly find. But while I can't quite figure out what Kansas State's capable of, three games isn't a big sample, but it sure seems like we know what Baylor's capable of now. They've responded beautifully to that West Virginia loss, or the back-to-back, the OSU and West Virginia losses. They seem to have some sort of kind of reassessment period. Their defense, their offense started picking things up even against West Virginia, and now their defense has been doing a little bit better as well. So I think, just from a pure trust standpoint, I think I trust Baylor a little bit more. This is the first opportunity, by the way. I've been going straight with my numbers so far, but I'm actually going to go against them. They have Baylor by 1.7, so a little bit on the Kansas State side. That's a really small gap. So I'm going to push it the other way and say Baylor wins by 3, 4, 5, 6, something like that. That seems a little more reliable to me.
It is good. Interesting game here. North Carolina with one loss heading to Wake Forest. Wake Forest is a 3.5-point favorite on a 2-game skid. Let's go Pete Bill Reese.
I hate picking North Carolina. I think I made that pretty clear throughout the season when we've seen them. They have a sort of offense that works in these like starbursts and then naps. They have a defense that is pretty much just napped all season. They are in I don't know what the numbers say to them, but to me, they are just sort of one of the most like fitful and weird programs to come along. I think the over-under number would look a lot different in this game than it did in our friends in Iowa City. I would think there's going to be a ton of points scored because both these defenses have been fairly overmatched this season. Wake's is better than last year, but still hasn't been great. It's been such a weird, atypical Wake Forest slide. That third quarter against Louisville might be one of the weirdest quarters of the entire season. I believe they had 6 turnovers in one quarter, which is like logistically really nearly impossible to do. Was that the first time a team's turned the ball over 6 times in a quarter, Bill?
I'm trying to remember now. People were talking about, there were tidbits about it. It was either 6 or 7, and they either, it had been a long time. It had happened before, but it had been quite a long time.
Cumberland did against Georgia Tech in that game. Georgia Tech scored 241, right? All that said, I just think I got to take North Carolina here, even though it's a sucker line. I just really feel like Drake May is playing as well as anyone in the country. Josh Downs is pushing himself into becoming a first round pick in the conversation. And I just think the skill and the speed of Carolina's offense is eventually going to wear down Wake and allow them to win. But that said, that Gene Chizik defense is just so awful, and it's an unconventional scheme that nobody's ever seen. So he clearly hasn't. If I was ever dumb enough to bet my own money on my bad picks, this would be the single last game I would pick this week.
Yeah, SP Plus has Wake Forest by 2, so really close to the line, a little bit on the North Carolina side, not a lot to to go with there, but I guess I'm going to use that as an excuse to pick North Carolina. I do that defense against what we know the Wake offense can be. Just seems like this is both of these teams seem destined for 40 something points, and it becomes kind of a toss up situation. So I guess, go with the team that's at least getting, if they lose by three, they cover. So I guess that's enough for me to take North Carolina. I wish I understood Wake's recent slide though. I mean, you can say it was a couple bad road games. Now they're back at home where they score 40 plus every game. Everything's going to be fine. But the turnovers obviously were just the biggest self-destruction I've seen all year against Louisville and against NC State. Even against a good NC State defense, I expected to see a little bit more from them. So yeah, I not understanding that exactly why they started to slide like that and then getting the 3.5, I'm going North Carolina.
And both of you guys picking North Carolina makes me want to pick Wake Forest badly. and Sam Hartman has been personally responsible for 9 turnovers in the last 2 games, 6 interceptions, 3 fumbles, all the fumbles against Louisville. That seems to me, because as good as he's been in his career, an aberration that certainly has to stop. Well, actually, it will stop because North Carolina's defense made Virginia's offense look good, and even let the Cavaliers stick around and stay in the game. So Hartman will get well against the Carolina defense. They'll put up a ton of numbers. And because you guys both begrudgingly picked Carolina, I know that I should pick Wake Forest. But for the people out there listening and watching, find you a sportscaster that loves somebody and loves you the way RD loves Drake May. So, I mean, I am not quite yet to, as a young quarterback, to the level of Andrew Luck quarterback crush on him, which I had from almost the second that Andrew Luck stepped on the field against Wake Forest in that first game that he played for Stanford. This dude is legit. And I mean, the numbers bear it out. He's right there with C.J. Stroud and touchdown passes, efficiency, 300-yard games. He's a dual threat. I mean, scares me to death that you guys begrudgingly took Carolina. I know Wake Forest is due to play back to its normal capabilities as opposed to what it has done the last 2 games. And I know that Carolina's defense stinks. And I know I should pick Wake Forest, but I can't do it while 10 and Carolina Blues on the other side. I'll take the Tar Heels too.
Chizik's really helped Drake May too, because he just keeps giving him the ball back so fast. So he's really accentuated that rise.
I look forward to the segments next year when Gene's back with us with you and Gene.
And the numbers are the numbers, man.
I know, no doubt.
You don't need your bits of chisdom to break those down.
Oh my goodness.
Yeah, I mean, it's been rough. At the end of the day, it says a lot about Drake May that they are 8-1 with that defense. Like, yes. Strength of schedule, all these other things, that's fine, but they're 8-1 with that defense.
Yeah, that's the thing, Bill. That's a great point, because I think it's really easy to say, well, they're 8-1 against the ACC and they played Notre Dame and they got beaten up. Not that Notre Dame's great, but they're capable despite a couple of face plants of their own right. But there were plenty of opportunities to lose some games, and they didn't. Other ones, I mean, other than the Notre Dame game. So they deserve credit for that, even if the ACC is not exactly a murderer's row schedule-wise.
They're 122nd in total defense.
That's out of 131 teams, so that's not very good, is it?
No, I see 5 categories in a row, including scoring defense, where they're ranked in the hundreds. And third down conversion percentage defense. So that's 6. So now
here's something I like to look at. When you find a stat like that, look at all of the bad teams around them and then try to find the outlier. Oklahoma State's around them, and they were a good team that sort of turned bad the last couple of weeks. But you're talking
pretty distinctly, by the way, stunning that they've just fallen. Now they've had some injuries and but whew, man, that has been a heel turn.
And they've done that. They have haven't played a single, looking at like opposing like SP Plus ratings here, they haven't played a single top 30 offense in SP Plus. Like Carolina has the best offense they've played. Carolina, yeah.
Who's the best offense?
Boy. App State and Pitt are the two best offenses they've played.
Oh, well, now we know why Wake's favored.
yep. Now we do. Now we do for sure. The defensive, they're down there with, you know, there are other teams. There are some teams that have had decent seasons, but they're ranked, you know, a couple spots above Vandy and Colorado, South Florida and Charlotte. You know, it's, Charlotte's dead last. They're not playing a lot of defense in certain parts of the state of North Carolina anyway, at least not in Charlotte and in Chapel Hill.
Last game on the board before we get to your locks. It is the Ting and your Tang Tang game. College Game Day will be in Austin as TCU comes in. Texas, a 7-point favorite. Let's go, Bill Reese Pete.
It is funny just the stepping back and realizing that the top four team, the top four unbeaten team is a 7-point underdog to a 3-loss team this late in the year. It's kind of not how things are supposed to work. I did appreciate, by the way, Texas. I had to kind of stand up for the advanced stats last week. All of them love Texas. I appreciated them then backing that up by actually beating Kansas State and living up to projections to some degree. I get that Texas is favored, and I kind of understand why. I just think 7's too much. You know, SP Plus says Texas by 4.8. I could live with a line between about 3 and 5. That feels like a I don't know which way I'd go in that case, but 7's just a lot. And what we've seen from Texas, they have actually won. Good for them. They're now up to, I believe, 4-8 under Steve Sarkisian in one score games. They've won two of them this year, but one of them was against Iowa State, which is every bit as bad as they are. The other was unfortunately against Adrian Martinez, who has his own close game travails. So if it's close, I do think you start to swing pretty hard in TCU's direction. And I'm going to pick TCU because of that. But Texas is, I at least know why they're favored here. They're still a very, very good football team.
I'm going to go with TCU too, an undefeated team getting a touchdown, even on the road with all the difficulties high-level teams have had pulling off big road wins. Which has been a theme for some of my picks today. But if I'm going to get a touchdown with that offense, with a group that believes, with a group that still carries the disdain for the burnt orange on the other side, which they always do, I'm going to take it. Now, there are so many interesting subplots in this, from Pete's guy, Quentin Johnston, who was committed to go to Texas and ended up going to TCU. All of these guys, for the most part, virtually all of these guys are Gary Patterson guys, at least in terms of recruits. Patterson now a special assistant to the head coach or whatever his title is, sort of working behind the scenes and in preparation for Texas, the school that he pretty much, you know, had disdain for as one of the little guys over the years. Now he's plotting to derail the best season TCU has had, or best start they've had since he himself was the head coach, whether you wanted 2014 or there. I think they're 9-0 for the first time since his Rose Bowl championship season in 2010. I'm sure he still has great affinity for the players that he recruited, but he's a feisty, competitive guy. And I'm sure that while he always burns the midnight oil, I'm sure he has had plenty of ideas to share with the Texas defensive on the field staff this week that might help them. And I'm sure it will be a little tougher in some respects than one might have imagined based on the way Texas has played defense up to this point. But I'm going to go with this veteran proven group, this good offensive line, Kendre Miller doing things on the ground. Duggan has been terrific. Duggan is a guy who's beaten Texas before, largely because of his running ability in a game a few years ago when he was early in his career. Johnston, if he's healthy and full go, which has been a question at times this season, motivated, Barber, Davis, all the guys who've made plays for them over the years. I'm not going to give away a touchdown against those guys until I actually see them not come through and win a game in the clutch. So I'm going to give me TCU, and thank you very much for the touchdown.
I like the horns. I like the horns basically because there's no earthly reason they should be a touchdown favorite in this game. I think people know this podcast who've been you know, listening know that I love Bijan Robinson. I've actually said I feel like Bijan Robinson's career has been somewhat wasted. Because I feel like it'll be like when Alvin Kamara is in the NFL and people are like, wait a minute, why wasn't he like bigger star in college? Bijan Robinson, I feel like with a big, rabid primetime home game, this is the time when Sark just like rides him and rides him and rides him, takes a little juice out of that TCU offense. I'll be very curious, Reese. I thought the crowd at Texas for the Bama game was as good as any Texas crowd I'd seen. Bit of a wine and cheese crowd. I've been there a lot of stale days. I really thought it was juiced up that day. Now, that was obviously Bama noon kickoff. I hope the environment is as rabid for TCU. The Texas fan base, this may shock you, is not a fan base that probably embraces being a spoiler, right? Like, they think you should sing the Eyes of Texas properly and apologize when you don't. And there's a high opinion of themselves that doesn't match a recent winning percentage. That said, I feel like they'll be dialed in at home. The one thing that gives me concern is even when Texas has won, other than the Oklahoma game this year, they really haven't won that impressively. But I just feel like this is one of those goofy lines where Coach Corso would say, somebody knows something. So I'm going to go with that somebody, and I'm going to ride Bijan here.
All right, fellas, let's hear your locks. And let's start with Bill, because Bill came on crowing about how he did some research instead of just doing it right this second. So I want to hear it from him.
Yeah, the research did not pay off at all. I always start by looking at, you know, which games does SP Plus disagree the most. But it's like, you know, Pitt, Virginia over 41. I don't trust that at all. I don't trust Minnesota versus Northwestern by, you know, -17.5, because I don't trust Minnesota to ever really, like, once they're up 17, they're fine just sitting on a lead. I don't like that one very much. The one I found that I can kind of trust the most, I think, is Notre Dame -17 against Navy. Obviously 17's a lot, especially for a team that has looked as bad as Notre Dame has at times this year, but they really seem to, like, you know, I was saying Baylor responded well to a pretty bad loss to West Virginia. Notre Dame has responded extremely well to that Stanford loss. They handled their business early against UNLV and cruised, and then they've just looked good. Really, first time all year, they've looked legitimately good these last couple. No, North Carolina. Sorry, they did beat North Carolina too. But they seem to have found a different altitude. Navy's been kind of a weird team. They've exceeded expectations or projections here and there, but just there's no reason to trust them a whole lot. So I think Notre Dame ends up winning this one by 24-27, something like that, and covering -17.
My lock is something I really haven't done this year. There's no doubt about who's going to win the game in my lock. The doubt is the number. Ohio State is handing 40 to Indiana at home, and I'm laying them in laughing. Indiana's defensive numbers are way down in the hundreds, pass defense, total defense, but that's not the reason. The reason is because of what happened last week. The Buckeyes were playing in horrible weather. C.J. Stroud really couldn't get the passing game going. It made the numbers take a hit, and even on a day when Hendon Hooker's Heisman candidacy took a step back, Stroud wasn't able to put up those kind of numbers, and it's kind of left you with this idea of, wow, who's going to win the Heisman? I'm not saying that that's part of the game plan, but I do think that 21 points against Northwestern is probably plenty of motivation for the Buckeyes to want to flex some muscle on Saturday. I think Ohio State lays minimum of 56 on the board and maybe more against Indiana to make a statement about, you know, their offensive prowess as they come down the stretch here. So in a rare, dangerous thing that no real gambler would ever recommend, my lock is that the Buckeyes cover 40 against Indiana.
All right. I had two that I was toggling between, and I am going to take Florida State -6.5 at Syracuse on Saturday night. I feel like the Syracuse free fall. Garrett Schrader's status is unknown for that game. Garrett Williams, their top corner, is out for the year with an ACL. And I just feel like the juice has been squeezed from that Syracuse run, and you could sort of feel the momentum going away. I think Florida State is a distinctly more talented program. And I feel like, you know, they're going to go into the dome motivated. You know, both are 6-3 and Syracuse is ranked, but it just feels a lot different for Florida State. So I'm going to take the Seminoles on a Saturday night in the dome to roll big.
I like that.
Going to be another
FSU.
Oh, you like FSU?
Yeah, I think, I mean, 2 straight weeks now they have taken on teams that were, that didn't have a lot to play for and absolutely destroyed them. And suddenly Syracuse doesn't have much to play for either.
Trends this time of year. There are only two types of teams this time of year. Teams that are playing for something and teams that are playing to ruin something for someone else. And if you've lost hope sometimes of doing that, it's hard to find that motivation. Looking forward to another
Wazoo, Bill. That was my other one I was thinking about, with Arizona Wazoo State having nothing to play for going up there.
Well, that their new quarterback, Borgay, they still don't have anything to play for, but they seem to enjoy moving the ball around a little bit.
Yeah. So
that would be kind of weird. But Wazoo's defense has been just trending straight up recently. They've been looking really, really good.
So you don't. So you're not believing in Stanford or anything. Stanford going into Utah. That's a 24-point spread.
Yeah.
The only thing I'd be hesitant there is Utah's happy to win by 17. You know.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, man. What in the world are they going to do to get that going at Stanford? Gracious. Mm-hmm. But they won at Notre Dame. I mean, which shows you if nothing else underscores the bizarre nature of this season. Not that Clemson's been the juggernaut that it typically has been, but they go and get their doors blown off in a place where Marshall and Stanford, you know, Marshall's not bad. They've had some issues since that game, but Marshall and Stanford went in there and won, and Clemson went in and didn't come close to winning.
So the fact that Notre Dame has blown out both of the likely ACC championship participants is kind of telling, I think, about the ACC this year.
Do you think if Jim Phillips sent Notre Dame like an ACC championship trophy, if Clemson and Carolina do play in the championship game, that it would entice the Irish to join them as a full-fledged member?
Oh, I think 2020, the way that all played out, if they didn't take the bait after that, I don't think they're taking that bait.
Yeah,
I've probably got a better chance of being on GQ's best dressed list than the Irish to go into the old ACC.
Would you be wearing your boggin on the?
I'd wear a boggin. There's no doubt, man. Get used to them. Once winter comes, man, the winter hats are in.
Let's ask Bill that. Bill on Wednesday, Pete and I were talking about his fondness for, as he calls them, winter hats. What did you call the type of headgear that Thamel's wearing right now when you were growing up, when you were a kid?
Either stocking cap or beanie. Stocking cap.
We'll that's stocking another cap. One. Yeah, yeah. Did you? I don't know if Pete said that. I told him that growing up, and I have no idea why, but we called it a boggin.
Mm-hmm. I've heard of that, yeah.
Have you really?
I just go with the straight hood generally for right. Like the next 5 months instead of the hat.
Fair. Fair. Keeps your ears warm in Como.
That's right.
There you go. Gentlemen, it'll be a great weekend. Hope the picks go better than they have. At least it's fun to talk about for sure. This has been the College Game Day Podcast. Download wherever it is that you like to get your podcast.